Before other discussions, Deborah has told me that she wants to make an announcement. Please.
Yes.
Well, if you speak up, yeah.
There's going to be a reception at the Savoy Hotel tomorrow, for investors in Israel state bonds, and the guest of honour, the inverted commas, is Benjamin Netanyahu. And we're planning a demonstration organised by Just Peace UK on Jews for Justice for Palestinians, with the participation of the ISN and the TSC, Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And if the reception starting at 6, we'd like people to get there for about 5:30. And the ISN are planning some kind of street theatre. So everyone can gather at about 5:30. It's the embankment entrance of the Savoy, just behind the embankment gardens, 5:30 tomorrow.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, Moshe.
I'd like to add something to these wonderful presentations. There are two reasons, relatively independent, why Zionism has aligned itself with the most, with, you know, the likes of GW. One is the point that Lenny presented so well. Let me put it very briefly. You meet a man in a pub, and over a pint of beer, that man tells you the Jews ought not to live among Gentiles, but should go and live around their own country. That man could be a Zionist, could be an anti-Semite. Just this way. So that you know, boils it down. But there is another aspect, and that is the fact that Zionism is not only a false response to the so-called Jewish problem, but is also a colonizing movement. It is a movement or a project of colonization. Now, compared to most other projects of colonization, it had a disadvantage in that, I mean, if you look at North America, if you look at Algeria, they were colonized by metropolitan countries sending their people there. In the case of Zionism, the project could only work by Zionism aligning itself with some power that was dominant in that part of the world. In other words, with the dominant imperialism of the era at that point. And that was inscribed, that was quite explicit in the Zionist project. Herzl wrote about it quite openly. He tried to actually get a charter from Germany imperialism. If he met, there's a famous photograph of him, partly fake, dressed in evening dress, meeting the Kaiser in Palestine on his visit. It didn't work out for various reasons. Then there was the Balfour Declaration, which was the alliance between Zionism and British imperialism. And today it is American imperialism. Zionism cannot realize its project without an alliance with whichever imperialism is dominant in the Middle East. So that, you know, that's the secret of its close alliance with today American imperialism, and on the other hand, of its importance for preserving and enhancing American imperialist interests in Europe. So these are the two reasons why Zionism is playing such a reactionary role in today's world politics.
I've seen so far three people indicating they want to speak. Before I call them, I'd like you to keep your comments as brief as you can in order to make the points you need to make, because we need to be out of here by 9:30 or shortly after. And second, particularly for the benefit of people who came in late, to repeat, we will not tolerate any racist comments or any abuse of the speakers, and anybody responsible for this will be asked to leave. Tony. Sorry, and that wasn't specifically directed at you.
I did wonder. If I can ask Kelly Grierson a couple of technical questions and a couple more substantive. First, the first document you quoted, am I correct in saying it was we're given by Joachim Prince, which I think was quoted in Hamsin. You hear me?
No. The document that I think you're referring to is
the letter. Yeah.
is a memorandum from the German Zionist Federation. In the book, I quote, I have the complete text of an article by Prinz, and in 1981, I interviewed Prinz. So I have excerpts from the interview in the book.
The second technical question is, in the book, in your new book, do you have a copy of the document from Ben Gurion, the Zionist executive in 1938, speaking about refugees?
No, I don't. I know the one that you're talking about. I quoted it in Zionism in the Age of the Dictators.
Small part of it.
Let me, I can answer the question. Unfortunately, when you're putting together a book like this, you have space limitations, so you cannot quote everything.
Okay, that's sure. It's just I've never seen it in the book. My two questions are, firstly, this was a recent controversy sparked off by Tansy L, who was a left Labour MP, about Jewish influence over American politics, which has led to their support for the Israeli state. I was just interested in your comments, because I think you've written very similarly about Jewish influence, in particular the Democratic Party. The second point I was making, Zionists often respond to accusations of collaboration with anti-Semitism and the Nazis by saying it's a question of real politics. They had to do it, their hand was forced, they had no alternative. One of the clearest, and I wonder if you've written about it, one of the examples post-war where Zionism, if you like, collaborated with anti-Semitism, was certainly a compulsion on it, was over the question of Argentina, one of the very few and the only anti-Semitic regime in the post-war period. And I'm just wondering, I know there is a fairly obscure book, I think in Hebrew about it, but has anybody else written or documented? I wrote an article for the first issue of Urban Stern and one or two other things, but I wonder if there has been actually any more comprehensive assessment and analysis of what was a very dark period in the pro-American
All right. Let me. I'll tell you what. Given the fact that we have to get out of here fairly quickly, et cetera, and there are other people, et cetera, want to ask questions and other people to answer questions, et cetera. Let me just deal with the question of Jewish influence in America, because that I am an expert on, and you know, as Britishers, you would not be expected to know this. There are two key things to understand about the Zionist role in America. Jews are now 2.2% of the entire population of the United States, about 1 out of 50, okay? On the other hand, of the 400 richest people in the United States, 88 out of 400 are Jews, okay? Now, the Zionist movement is, in 1948, 90% of the Jews called themselves Zionists. In the last percentage number that I have is from a Zionist source from 1995, and it was already down to 22%. Now, I have absolute numbers, not percentage numbers, that show that it's way less than that now. Okay? The reason why most Jews have abandoned Zionism is because growing up in America, since the Civil Rights Movement, they believe in equality before the law. Okay? They no longer feel any need, and they are now not only the richest group in America, they are the most educated group in America. So, and they are pouring into the hard sciences. So the result is that as of now, a majority of the Jews in America no longer believe in the Jewish religion, and are antagonized by Zionism, because they cannot accept the notion of an official Jewish religion anywhere. Okay? They cannot accept the notion of official religion. All right? So they are now pouring away. I just want to end. But on the other hand, as I say, 22%, let's say now 15% of the Jews are still Zionists. Let's say I'm using a round number. When you are 15%, when you have supporters among the 88 richest people in America, it means that you have money, even if you don't have a movement, if you follow me. So they can pour money into both the Democratic and Republican parties, and they do both, okay? One of the reasons why Bush has Wolfowitz and all these people around him is because he sees the Zionist movement as a major source of funds. But what is now extremely important to understand is that we have a Congress that is 98% Zionist, most of them Gentiles, of course, but 98% Zionist for the money, plain and simple, whereas less than 22% of the Jews are Zionists, okay? That contradiction is going to continue and emerge and become more and more distinct in the United States as the pro-Palestinian movement is developing and as it is indeed growing quite rapidly in the United States.
And also as the politics of Jewish religion instead of Israel develop, I'd imagine. Come right there, yeah.
Yes, I just wanted to pick up on a couple of points because mention's been made by a friend over there about the Balfour Declaration. And I must say that I'm utterly ignorant of this aspect of the debate that took place within the British Cabinet about the early drafts of the Balfour Declaration. Because the only substantial opponent of the Balfour Declaration, the early drafts of the Balfour Declaration, which were very explicit about their support for the Zionist project, was in fact a Jew, Lord Montague. And it's quite intriguing reading what he had to say if you want to have the connections drawn between Zionism and anti-Semitism. As he put forward his view, he put it in a memorandum which was called the anti-Semitism of the present government. He went on to say, I wish to place on record my view that the policy of His Majesty's government is anti-Semitic in result and was a part of a rallying ground for anti-Semites in every country in the world. He was quite clear about the implications of the Zionist project. I assume that it means, he said, that Mohammedans and Christians ought to make way for the Jews and that the Jews should be put in all positions of preference and should be peculiarly associated with Palestine in the same way that England is with the English. We will find a population in Palestine driving out its present inhabitants, taking all the best of the country. But he also assumed that perhaps in the future, citizen of this new country must be granted only as a result of a religious test. So I think it's quite intriguing. He was an imperialist, Lord Montague, a disgraceful imperialist, but he clearly had an understanding of Zionism. The second point is the alliance between Zionism and reaction, which I agree, absolutely. And let us remember that reaction. It is
yoga.
Firstly, in the 1944 Congress Conference of the Labour Party, which gave explicit support for the Zionist project, also explicit support for the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. And the most fervent supporters of the Zionist project in the immediate post-war years and the early period of the Zionist state were the left wing of the Labour Party. Right? And it's not surprising, therefore, that that tradition has been continued today. It is not a new tradition, but the advisors of the current Labour government are, of course, Lord Leadley, who is a fervent pro-Zionist himself. And why you see this complete and utter identification of British imperialist interests still with the Zionist project, led by the Labour government and by the Labour Party.
Can you keep it to the end and then I'll come back?
Okay.
Because there's a lot of people to speak here. I saw somebody right at the back.
Let me answer my questions again.
Okay. Then, yeah, I know, that's enough. The next person I saw was Sabi.
Well, one point about Balfour, I think, is that Balfour was anti-Semitic himself, or at least collaborated with anti-Semitism. He was leader of the Conservative Party during the 1905 election, when the Tory Party issued the most flagrantly anti-Semitic leaflets to the working class of the East End, describing Jewish refugees from Eastern Europe as people coming in bringing diseases and so forth, the sort of thing that we would associate with the BNP. That's one point. But I'd like to raise a question about the future. Really, we often hear Zionism being compared to South African apartheid, but as I understand it, there was one crucial difference between the two colonizing regimes, in that Zionism always excluded Palestinians from the Jewish economy, from the land, and so on. never employ Palestinian workers, never bought Palestinian goods, and so on. Whereas in South Africa, the white regime super exploited the black working class, which meant, of course, that the black workers had tremendous power, potentially. Different from the Palestinian workers, Palestinians never had that economic power. And really, that just poses a question of where we go, what is the future? Palestinians, we support them in every way we can. We have great admiration for the international solidarity movement. We support the boycott of Israeli goods. But really, the question is, can there be a solution within Palestine on its own? Don't we have to look ultimately to a Middle East-wide social revolution? We're seeing all sorts of things, very exciting things happening in the Middle East, what's happening in Iraq, even in Saudi Arabia, a political ferment, which today takes the form of an Islamic form largely, but which has, I think, potential in the future really to move beyond that to some kind of socialist politics. And describe himself as a socialist. Really, is there not a need today to relate the Palestinian struggle for liberation to the Middle East-wide struggle for social liberation?
Yeah, I'll be giving the speakers a chance to say a few more words a bit later. I want to say I'm taking speakers in the order in which I see them. So far, all the hands I've seen have been male, so I must say that if I see any women indicating, I'll take them as a priority and not just wait till their turn comes. The next person I saw was over there.
Could I ask Lenny to comment on the role of Zionists in relation to opening the doors of America to Jewish refugees from Nazism? Because, as Tony Greenstein said, the Zionist response to the evidence you quoted would have been to say, well, this was realpolitik because they were desperate to allow Jews into Palestine, so it was all to save Jewish lives. But as I understand it, Zionists were actually actively opposed to attempts to find refuge for Jews in other countries. And in Irving Howe's, although he's a dreadful old Zionist, Irving Howe's Wonderful History of the Jews of New York, I remember reading a very impressive discussion about account of how before the First World War, when the first proposals for immigration controls were introduced in America, the entire Jewish community opposed it, not only the socialist left and the liberal internationalists, but rabbis who said it was unethical and quoted from the Torah about how you should always stand up for the stranger, and actually said it was unethical if Jews had benefited from the open door to deny the open door to others. It wasn't even a question of keeping the door open for Jews. And yet by the 1930s and 40s, we find that this tradition seems to have evaporated. And as I understand it, the leaders of American Jewry did very little. They didn't want to embarrass Roosevelt and so on and so forth. Could you say some more about that?
Very briefly.
Of course, also with regard to Russian Jewry, where of course they shamefully lobbied to keep them out of America.
Very briefly, you're right. That, I mean, it absolutely, Rabbi Stephen Wise, who was the prime Zionist in the 30s, writes, and I quote in Zionism in the Age of the Dictators, which by the way is on the internet, so anybody can look at it, there were gigantic Jewish demonstrations which he didn't want, okay, and he very reluctantly went along with. By the 40s, during the Holocaust, one wing of the Zionist movement, interestingly enough, the Irgun, the right wing, did decide to make rescue a priority, and Wise, I have the document in here, went to the State Department and tried to get, told them that Peter Bergson, the leader of this group that was really trying, was a worse enemy of the Jews than Hitler. Okay, that's the level of fanaticism that they reach, but that's in here.
Inbal.
Well, let me just go back to what Sally was saying, that Palestinian having economic power, because actually, it was one of the initially Zionists didn't employ Palestinians as a label, because they had this idea of having Jewish work by Jewish labor and all that kind of thing. And very quickly they kind of abandoned it because they didn't know how to do it. And in fact they imported the kind of Jewish Arabs in Yemen to do it, very for them. But most of the time it was a minority actually opposed to employ Arabs. Most of them actually didn't employ Arabs. That's for a start. Secondly, especially after 68, there was
the majority of the work was done by Palestinians. The majority of the work was done in Israel. All the dirty work was done by Palestinians. After the Intifada, Israel had to import workers from Portugal and from Thailand and from Africa and lots of places to replace the Palestinians that they put after curfew. So in fact, Israel had to find a solution because they didn't want Palestinians to come and work in Israel. But I mean, all the markets, all the toilets were cleaned by Palestinians. Everything you can think of, but Israel didn't want to do it by Palestinians. So it's not quite, the economic relationship was actually there. And the other thing that I wanted to ask, which is more of a question, is that can you refer to the Lausanne conference in 1942?
To the what?
Lausanne.
No.
I don't know if you know what they're talking about.
No.
Well, I think it's Lausanne, maybe I'm wrong.
I think it's Vienna.
Yeah.
I'm going to refer to it.
Because I think it's quite an important place.
It's not 1942 either, it's 1938.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Oh, well, I date, so I'm not place so long. But the other thing about it, and this is where there was a division, I think, between the two groups of Zionists, is what after the news about the Holocaust did come about. I think that there was a difference between Zionist camps, what, how to react and how to, what to do with them, how to influence the imperialist powers and ways of thinking. So it's quite interesting.
If I may relate to the Vienna conference, it's important that it's 1938 because in the 1938 sees 6 million refugees, 5.5 actually, like the number of people destroyed in the Holocaust of Jewish descent. Refugees in Europe, European refugees, these are not third world refugees like we now see quite a lot of, but European refugees. Many of them are Jewish, but many of them are not Jewish. And a bit like the Labour government of today, the governments of Europe are freaking out. And they decide to call an international conference. And I have no time for, you know, a lot of description of this, but I'll just say this. This is November 1938, which is less than a year before the war. And they are calling on all the governments, not just in Europe, but Australia, Canada, and indeed the Dominican Republic, which I'll come to in a minute, to come and be represented and offer those refugees a home. And this is lasting 10 days. And each government speaks on its turn. And just to quote one government, the Australian one, the Prime Minister of Australia says, one refugee is too many. Must be some relation of blanket. I've got to look into this. Now, it's an interesting reaction comes from the Dominican government. The Dominican government is, of course, under, it's a military dictatorship, a bloody military dictatorship, and they offer, the British government is offering something like 9,000 refugees they are ready to take. Wow, this is great, yeah? And different governments offer paltry sums of that nature. The Dominicans make a bid for 250,000. Now, everyone is very pleased, of course. It's not going to resolve the problem, but they are talking to the good old dictator and saying to him, you know, why do you want 250,000 refugees? And he says, what do you mean? I mean, those Jews are white, and I can improve my racial stock because we have a problem with black people in the Dominican Republic. So this is an interesting connection to all that we were talking about, but I just want to end with relating to what Tony was saying. The most famous document relating to that, and I think probably you two are referring to that, is a secret memorandum written by Ben-Gurion that gave evidence as the head of the Jewish agency at the, you know, the secret memorandum is a memorandum he writes from Evian back. You say now?
Weizmann was supposed to appear there, and they were discussing whether he should go and what he should say there.
He's written a memorandum to the Jewish agency director. And in the memorandum, he says this is a very dangerous development. If indeed those countries in Latin America, in Central America, and you know, in Europe, everywhere, take Jews into their countries, that will be the end of Zionism. We have to fight it. Because if they take hungry refugees, Jews with nowhere to go, into, say, Latin America, then all the Zionist and Jewish support will go to them. And what we will remain, and listen to this, what will remain in Palestine is a national museum of Jewry. So that's what you're referring to. And just to end, this document is in its entirety in Hebrew, in a famous book which you cannot buy, by Shin Bet Bet Zvi, that has many, many other documents that are not anywhere, or hardly anywhere. The Shin Bet, not Shin Bet Bet Zvi, but the Shin Bet, the Mossad, bought most of those books, and those that they haven't managed to buy, I remember going to buy it in his home, and one room was full of those books because he wouldn't give them to anyone unless he knew that they are going to read it. Yeah. So if you try to buy it in Israel, there's no chance. The guys did. I don't know what happened to the room full of books. You can't find it.
I'm going to try to give everybody a chance to speak, but can you keep it brief? And I'm sorry, speakers, can you not respond until the end, because otherwise we won't all get in.
I was just wondering if Lenny could give the analogous analysis of the media control in the United States, you know, just the analogous analysis you gave to the political situation, in particular the control of the media with regard to keeping the murky aspects of the Israeli occupation out of the media.
I'll answer that in the end. Remind you.
Okay.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
Everyone's probably already got a leaflet because I was trying to make sure that everybody did have one. I just wanted to say that there is a lot that we can do in this country. We need to oppose our own government because it is Zionist, but we also need to support the boycott of Israeli goods. Now, we have a campaign to particularly target one company because we think it's very effective to actually focus particularly on one company. And that company has to be Marks and Spencer's, because for the last 80 years, Marks and Spencer's has supported Zionism without question, and it still supports Zionism. So we would very much like as many people to come along as possible. Our next picket will be this Saturday. We also have meetings, and our next meeting will be next Wednesday, where we will discuss the roadmap. And we'll be discussing an article in the paper that we also sell. It's also by boycotting Marks and Spencer's and by having pickets outside of Marks and Spencer's, it's also an opportunity to talk to people on the street, to see where people's ideas lie. I mean, the media in this country is very, very biased towards Israel. There's not an awful lot said about how the Palestinians live. And so it's an opportunity to get out there and to talk to people and to explain the situation to people. And we would very much welcome Jews Against Zionism to join us, particularly because we obviously come into contact with a lot of people who call us anti-Semitic.
I must say, speaking purely for myself here, of course I support the boycott of Israeli goods, but I am rather uneasy about picking out Marks and Spencer in particular as the first place to boycott. It seems to me that it's best known as a high-profile Jewish company rather than as a particular supporter of Israel, and I'm not convinced it's the best focus. John.
Just wanted to slightly, I mean, in a way, it's an extremely good meeting, but there's just a slight danger we're all talking to ourselves. I think there's a kind of general agreement, and a very hard agreement about anti-Zionism in the room. There's not been a question of that, and that's fine. I just want to change direction because of that, for the following reasons, partly something that Alice really reminded me of, but let's not lose sight of Alice's brilliant contribution at the beginning, which is about especially young Jews in Britain at the moment. And I don't think any, and there's a slight danger of fragmentation on the left in terms of the Palestine question. I don't think any of the organisations so far has successfully addressed what must be quite a profound crisis in many Jewish homes, especially amongst young Jewish kids. By the way, probably still brought up in semi-Zionist environment and in that sort of culture. But even within that culture, the crisis is so savage in Israel-Palestine. It's so horrendous. I mean, even the media obviously doesn't get the descriptions that Chaim and Alice have got through, but even in the biased media, enough's coming through to make this state look extremely peculiar in the minds of middle-of-the-road, liberal-minded young people of Jewish persuasion. I just think that we just need to think, in terms of the campaign, to provoke, to deepen that crisis. I'd like to see the organisations coming together and aiming at Jewish youngsters, trying to exacerbate the feelings that they have, no doubt aroused out of their own family, to try to win more young Jews away from Zionism. I think that's something that we should think about coming from this meeting, the way we can possibly address that, going to the Jewish areas, going around the coffee bars, going to the schools and trying to get the kind of debate, bringing some of the arguments from this meeting into that kind of arena.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm actually trying to do something about the youth. I don't know if I'm going to be able to preach to the converted, but I am very worried about the power of the Union of Jewish Students, which is very close on as an ambassador for Israel. And questioning Jews, particularly Israel, do get sidelined, do get attacked. I mean, I'm not coming in student for years, but thank you to tell me about
it.
But before Ben speaks, I'd just like to say that I'm setting up, a branch of, a student branch of the Jews for Justice and Palestine, because I'm a member of that anyway. If you want to add the anti-Zionist element, that's quite amazing. I think it's going to be called Jewish Students for Justice and Palestine, to act as an antibody. Antibody,
counter-body.
To the UJS, we're trying to sort it out quickly so we can start setting up refreshment fairs. So, and then hopefully we can get the student JFP to preach to the rest of the JSOCs, etc., etc., and also to SEC for the next National Union Students Conference. So that's the props, which is going to put some people in the program.
Guy in the black shirt.
I have a small question over Len's new book. The talk that I found extremely enjoyable reminded me very much of what I seem to remember from reading your book ages ago. And I wondered whether the work in the book that you've edited now has changed in any way your notion or your knowledge of these issues, or whether the new book is actually rather a companion volume to the old book, or whether there's actually something substantially new apart from being in full-length document.
I think there's only time to take the other two people who indicated they want to speak, and then to let the speakers, our guest speakers, say a few final words. And I'm sorry if anybody else puts their hand up now, but we're going to have to get out. Richard.
My knowledge of debates among Australian Jewish socialists is probably less than the number of people in this room. But I have attempted to follow these things. It seems to be a frequently those debates have been to founder on the kind of disagreements about sort of strategic goals, democratic secular state, or various kind of models. You know, power of revolution, pressure from without, Palestinian guerrilla warfare, internal kind of collapse of Zionism, democratic secular state, socialist revolution throughout the Middle East. And each have their proponents, two states. You know, each have their proponents, and each have, each are problematic in various ways, it seems to me. I mean, for a start, democratic secular state, in my view, is not an end goal. It's a kind of somewhere a staging post along the line to a genuine free and socialist society. But I mean, anyway, it's a big subject. But I mean, what interests me is not, you know, putting a label on the end result and saying and saying that's the key task is to have one slogan that we all agree. It's kind of how you get there. If you like, that's a term of roadmap. you know, there's been lots of discussion, and I think one of the comments you spoke earlier said, yes, much agreeing with land designers, and it seems to me there's less agreement on a kind of viable program towards that goal. And admittedly, that's neither a short topic nor an easy one, but nonetheless, it's the most important in many ways, it seems to me, because you can sit around and discuss how Rotten Island is for a long time without necessarily moving the political terrain, you know, very far, although I you know, wish you all the best in your project, which I hope will be very successful. Very thoughtful and precise ones, very short.
Well, I mean, I've certainly got a lot to say on that, but I'm not going to say it now. But I think it's clear from this meeting that we will need more meetings, and that we should be able to establish a group to start fleshing this out.
I just wanted to ask one question. Is there any evidence of Prescott Bush, the grandfather of President Bush, and Zionist leaders, and just some German bankers, collaborating with them?
Yeah. Ben, did you want to say a few words on something? No. Right. Just very briefly.
Just a question for information, really. I think it was Haim in his speech referred to the Zionist project and that it's essentially aggressive and believe in ethnic cleansing and so on and so forth. I have always thought of the Zionist project as simply the establishment of the sovereign state of Israel, which would have its own immigration policy as the sovereign state requires. And if that is right, then Zionism was successfully completed from that definition in about 1949. And so in spite of deploying, like everyone else here, the present and past policies of actual Israeli governments, I question whether they are a necessary part of Zionism. If Zionism doesn't mean that, if Zionism wasn't successfully completed in 1949, then, and the people therefore who, all those in the world since then who believed in undoing the sovereign state of Israel and then called themselves anti-Zionists. It seems to me that is what is actually the word anti-Zionism currently means in the world today. It means to reverse in some form that notion of a sovereign state of Israel. So my question to Chaim is, do you in fact support that? If you in fact believe in the continuation of a sovereign state of Israel with obviously a much more compassionate policy towards Palestine, then could you say that if that is your position?
That's the starting point of a huge discussion, which clearly we're not going to have a chance to even start to address now. But I'll just call the speaker to say a few words now. Alice, do you want to?
I would like to say one thing. I'd like to urge everyone who hasn't already or hasn't considered it to go to Palestine. You can do it without standing in front of tanks and bulldozers. You can just go and experience the wonderful culture, hospitality, food, and walk with the Palestinian people and see what's going on there. My father, who's 77 and can't walk properly, was out there for a week. He came out to join me for a week to see what was going on. So, do go.
A friend of mine is there from Oxford at the moment, and he's going around trying to establish direct links between bodies in Oxford, theatre groups, cultural groups, political groups, trade unions, and their equivalents in Palestine. And he's finding an amazing response. And it's easier, obviously, to do that in a town like Oxford than in London. But certainly there is a lot of potential for using that to bring direct links back from Palestine to places here. Fine.
3 points in 3 sentences. Zionist project, getting the Arabs out of Palestine. You don't believe it? Read Herzl, 1996, 1997, the diaries, it's all there. Sorry, that's what I meant. It's been a long day, yeah. 18.
Long century.
And a long century, yeah. So he's saying it, he means it, and everyone else since then, in 30 seconds, that's what I can say. The other thing is about young Jews and talking to them on the lines that a number of people related to. I think that's good. I think that's not good enough. We're living in a country which is not only racist, but it lives through the most racist period that I have known in Britain in my lifetime. And most of this racism is against Muslims, it's against Arabs, it's against people from the third world, and now it's also against people from Europe, from the East, etc. It's against gypsies, it's against anybody. Now, Jews are behaving as if it's nothing to do with them. So my message to young Jews is go to East London, talk to Muslims there, talk to them about Israel and Palestine, and come together and say that you're against what was done to your forefathers in Britain and in other countries, and it's not good enough to talk to Jews in isolation, I think. And the last thing, Sabi, I can't really relate to this because, you know, the whole question of the future and what we want in the future is enormous. And I remember that the one thing I learned from Moshe when I first met him is that the Zionist project is very different from all other, projects of colonization, because it is based, while the others are based on exploitation, this is based on expulsion. So most of my Palestinian friends now say there's no two states. There's no Palestinian state. There'll never be a Palestinian state. We're socialist Palestinians, gave it up. We don't want it. We want one state, democratic, secular in the whole area of Palestine, because the Israelis have made it impossible to have a Palestinian state. Now that's an interesting development. I think we should think about that, whether, and that's in a way answering your question about the future of Israel. I am not supporting the existence of Israel as a racist Zionist state. There is no reason to support it. I'm supporting the existence of the Israeli Jewish group that lives there only if they give up their project, which is a colonizing project, it's a dispossession project, and they come to live with the Palestinian on an equal footing. That we can all support, but not the state that has done what it has done and continues to do so.
Before I call Lenny, just a few final remarks. It's clear from the success and the size of this meeting that there is the space for this group. Anybody who wants more information, there is a sheet going around. Please make sure you put your contact details down. Come and speak to me or to one of the other organisers after the meeting, and we'll have to discuss how we take it forward and what we do next. Second, organising this meeting and helping to organise Lenny's tour has, as you can imagine, cost a lot of money, and particularly through the success of this meeting and having to move it to a larger, more expensive room. So I hope that as people leave, they will make a contribution, a generous contribution if they can, but certainly some sort of contribution towards the costs both of this meeting and I should say Lenny is going on from here. He's going to be speaking at meetings in Leeds, Birmingham, Liverpool, Edinburgh, Dundee, Aberdeen, and possibly other places. Many of them organised by people who are sort of contacts of Jews Against Zionism. Finally, before I call Lenny, to remind everybody of the picket, the Savoy Hotel, 6 p.m. tomorrow. Lenny.
Okay.
Sorry? And we still have a speaker, Lenny.
Okay, I'm going to be very brief and deal with the questions as they were asked. In the new book, I have a, someone asked to mention Balfour's anti-Semitism. I have a letter from Chaim Weizmann about his first his meeting with Balfour, in which Balfour tells Weizmann that he, Balfour, met Chasam Avavna, the world's most world's most important anti-Semite at that time, later an intimate friend of Adolf Hitler, and that he, Balfour, agreed with her anti-Semitism, whereupon Weizmann says, well, I agree with her too, except I have a different solution to the problem, okay? And in addition, I have a wonderful article from Winston Churchill in which he talks about, it's called Zionism versus Bolshevism, a struggle for the soul of the Jewish people from 1920, in which he says nothing could be more significant than the fury with which Trotsky has attacked the Zionists generally, and Dr. Weizmann in particular. The cruel penetration of his mind leaves him no doubt that his scheme for a worldwide Jewish state under Jewish domination is directly thwarted and hindered by this new ideal. Okay, so a few Brits here and there have been known to be anti-Semitic. Someone talked about, mentioned that they're accused of being anti-Semitic. That what you really mean is self-hatred, your Jewish self-hatred. My answer to that, whenever it's brought up, is that anybody who thinks that I'm a Jewish self-hater has to really talk to my ex-girlfriends, because they all say that I was in love with myself and that the only one that I ever loved was myself. Now, I mean, let's be honest, all right? As far as I mentioned before, this enormous influence of the Zionist lobby on the politicians, but that is not the same thing as Zionist domination of the media. They don't dominate the media. In fact, and for example, the New York Times is owned by a Christian of Jewish descent, and he has said, hey, you know, how come I can't come to your country, you know, et cetera. I mean, you know, as a because I'm not a Jew, et cetera, et cetera. And in fact, in the run-up to this last war, I was really quite amazed, I got to say, at how much focus in the mainstream media there was on Wolfowitz and all these other guys. And in fact, now everybody's going around saying, you know, don't cry Wolfowitz, you know, I mean, right? You know, it's you got to be careful. And they're right, because you have to talk about imperialism and capitalism, all those nasty things. As to whether the book is a companion or a new book, it certainly is a companion, but it's more than that in the sense that I find that most people have opinions on history based on books on history. But I'm a historian. I went and dug up the documents, okay? Now, I want to encourage other people to read this book because they're actually going to read complete documents. In other words, it's going to really develop your ability to propagandize against Zionism, because you're not just quoting somebody or quoting a snippet. You read this, you can take on Chaim Weizmann, you can take on Sharon, you can take on whoever runs the Zionist movement here without any problem. I want to deal with one question, close my part of this with one question, with dealing with one aspect of things. I said that the bulk of American Jews are now non-Zionists. They're not anti-Zionists, they're non-Zionists. In other words, they reject it because it has no meaning in their lives, and they resent the idea of an Orthodox Jewish state, you know, the idea of a religious state. They reject that, etc. They're not anti-Zionists because at the end of the day, the Palestinian movement has what? Hamas? That's not going to attract them. The PLO, which is as crooked as a dog's hind leg. I mean, you know, I mean, they're not going to go for that. So obviously the Palestinians and people like Chaim and other Moshe, et cetera, the progressive Israelis have to set up some kind of an organization that, you know, because understand, you cannot defeat Zionism or Tony Blair or anybody else just with words. You have to have an organization, a coalition, a party, or whatever. Yeah, you have to have a P.O. box for people to send the checks to, if you know what I mean. All right? It's very real. Okay? I challenged a prominent Zionist in New York once at a meeting I quoted Sharon, who went in 1981 to South Africa as a minister of defense, as the minister of defense, and came back and told everybody that, you know, they need more arms over there because, you know, fighting communism is hot, dirty, sweaty work, and you know, you've got to be, got to have a gun in your hand to do it, and so on and so forth. And the guy's response was, when you talk about Israel and South Africa, it's a showstopper, but we're not fighting the ANC. And I thought about that, because I listened to my opponents, and I thought about that, and he's right on both levels. You talk about Israel and racism, South Africa, and the Nazis, etc., it stops the show. But until there's a Israeli-Palestinian equivalent of the ANC, you can't beat Zionism. You can't wag your finger at it, shame, shame. You have to put up a new organization to replace it. I completely agree. We need a democratic, secular state, and I would not throw up my hands in disgust if we were a democratic, secular, socialist state. No, I would not, okay? But in order to get a democratic, secular state, you need first a democratic, secular movement. Now, I'll close by saying, yes, this book is available right here for $17.95. So please, and I really do want to sell it. Okay, I don't want to become rich, and I don't even want to become famous, but I want you to read it, and I want you to then be able to take it out to other people and get them to read it. Thank you.